Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the Voice of Change. I'm Sharon Ann Wyckoff, host of today's programming. It is my honor today to have Marilyn Milos with me. We are going to be talking about a very delicate subject and yet such an important one, circumcision. Marilyn is a registered nurse and director of the National Organization of Circumcision Information Resource Centers. When Marilyn began her work in 1979, the rate of circumcision in the United States was 85 to 95%. Today it has dropped to 32.5%. Parents are saying no to circumcision, and we'll talk about why. So stay tuned for this very important show. The Voice of Change brings to internet radio individuals speaking out on pertinent aspects of life during these transformational times. During these programs, I interview spiritual leaders, enlightened teachers, educational professionals, visionaries, educators, birth therapists, cultural creatives, and artists. Guests will share their perspective, their expertise, and their insights to support, encourage, and inspire new ways for these changing times. I believe that these times are asking us to live in greater harmony with ourselves, our loved ones, as well as with all on the planet. No longer can we live unconsciously. The time for conscious creating has come. And although there is much chaos taking place on the planet and in the lives of many, the potential for greater understanding, healing, and change has never been greater. This is the time to be open to new ideas, new possibilities, and new ways of handling old problems. Individuals, as well as numerous groups, are working diligently to bring about change on the planet. The journey into the new world begins with just one new idea and one small step. I invite us all to begin anew in each and every moment. Marilyn Milos, as I said, is a registered nurse and founder and executive director of the National Organization of Circumcision Information Resource Centers, NOCIRC. The coordinator of International Symposia on Circumcision, Genital Integrity and Human Rights, and the co-editor of 7 books of Symposia Proceedings, has been called the mother of the American Genital Integrity Movement. We're going to be talking about all aspects of circumcision today and why it's taking place, continues to, and how it all began. So we're going to welcome now Marilyn Milos to the show, and it is indeed an honor to have her with us today. And she's still unmuted, but there we go. Welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you, Sharon. What a nice introduction, and thank you so much for dealing with this hugely important, crucial human rights issue.
Yes, it certainly is. It is just so important, and I just don't think that many parents are really aware. We just kind of have this blank idea that circumcision is done, and of course that isn't what we need to be thinking in this situation at all. Can you begin by telling us how you happened to get started in this particular human rights
endeavor?
Yes, and maybe your background that led up to this.
Yes. Well, I'm a mother of 4 children.
Yes.
I have 3 sons who were all circumcised, the first one in 1958. He was born on Christmas Day and probably circumcised in the next couple of days. I don't know for sure.
Yes.
The doctor told me it wouldn't hurt. It only took a second and would protect my precious son from a myriad of ills that would befall him if he kept his foreskin.
Mm.
Interestingly, though, Sharon, what's really interesting to me is that his father was intact. But when we were first married, when we were very young, in those days, nobody had sex before marriage, so everybody got married in their teens. You know what I mean?
Yes, right.
We were young. I was 18 and he was 20. And I remember when I first met him, he said, or when we first started dating, he said, I want to tell you something. He said, I haven't been circumcised. I guess as we got closer to our wedding, I haven't been circumcised. And I didn't know what he was talking about. But I thought, well, it's something he doesn't feel good about. So I just said, well, that's okay. I love you just the way you are, whatever. That, you know, I didn't know what he was.
Right.
And then prior to the birth of our first baby, and my husband was a twin, and his mother said that when the twins were born, that the doctor said not all the boys needed to be circumcised, and he would let them know. And in this case, the twins didn't need to be. So I,
So that was the way it was in his day. He said they didn't need to be, and so your husband was not circumcised.
He said not all babies needed to be. So that, to me, led me to think that, well, maybe some babies need it and some babies don't. I still didn't have a clear idea. I don't know what we're talking about. And I didn't know that when I brought my baby home with the Plastibel on his penis and when he screamed and what they call colicky babies, and I'm sure it had to do with that early trauma. You know, I had no idea. And and also at 18, I don't think, you know, it's taken me years to really understand how precious our babies are and how aware they are. Everybody's aware, and the importance of welcoming them into the world gently and peacefully, and it will color them their whole lives. And now, circumcision is a primal wound, and I had three sons, two followed that boy, and still I didn't understand, in spite of the fact that I'm sure that he had reactions to it. They never clicked with me, but
said something so important. You said that it's a primal wound.
Yes.
Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, I will, and it's done behind closed doors. But it's done behind closed doors.
Go ahead.
In 1979, I was 39, and I had been catching babies at home. I had an opportunity then. All of my babies had been born in the hospital, but I knew that there was a better way. And after witnessing a home birth, I thought, oh boy, that's where babies need to be born. And then I started helping my friends have their babies at home.
And I
went back to school then. As more and more people asked me to catch their babies, I thought, well, I better go back to school. And, you know, I'd never had a problem, and I'd had 10-pound babies and no tears. But still, I thought, well,
I
better learn what I'm doing. I better be certified. So my last rotation in May of 1979, I was finally on the obstetrical unit. And by the way, the worst things I ever saw happen in a hospital were happening to mothers and babies.
That's so sad.
So unlike what is necessary and needed
for
a healthy newborn in the first hours of life. As a nursing student, our teacher instructor spoke today, we get to go see a circumcision, and I'm thinking, well, this is nothing. And we got into the room, and the baby is strapped to a plastic board, 4-point restraint, arms and legs tethered down, and he was pulling on the restraint. So nobody was standing.
Oh, so he is strapped down to this board, and that's what you see when you go in. Oh, my goodness.
That's what we all saw, and all the nurses. And this happened in the nursery. This is at Marin General Hospital. Happened in the nursery where all the other babies also heard the screams.
In the nursery.
Yes. And so as I watched this, I said to my instructor, can I go and comfort the baby? And she said, no, wait till the doctor gets here. And I thought, wait a second, this is the nurse. You know, I was a mother first, and I couldn't stand the scream of babies. I knew that the scream, when they cry, there's something wrong and you need to help them. But here's this baby going, pulling against the restraints, making the same sounds I would be making if I was doing that, and yet nobody
comforting was doing
him.
It.
So
they
I went
blanked
to
out.
And I said, may I comfort him? And he said, sure. So I stuck my finger in the baby's mouth. Oh, that's what he said. He said, go put your finger in the baby's mouth. He didn't know where my finger had been, but I was going to do anything to comfort the baby.
Yes.
And I started rubbing his head and telling him what the doctor had told me prior to the circumcision of my sons. This isn't going to hurt. It's only going to take a minute, and it's going to protect you from a myriad of ills. And he started to calm down and was sucking and listening to my voice.
Oh, how beautiful.
And quieted down until the doctor started, and when he started, first they put clamps on, and then they tear the foreskin from the glands because they're connected at birth. And during this stuff, the baby let out a scream, and I couldn't console him. It was, and he screamed in a way I'd never heard a human being scream before.
So at that point,
I thought, this really isn't good. And then I realized that I'm standing in front of all of my classmates and my instructor and the doctor as I'm trying to comfort this baby unsuccessfully, and my bottom lip started to quiver, and then I could just feel I'm going to cry, and tears started pouring out of my eyes. And the doctor looked at me and said, there's no medical reason for doing this. That was it.
Said that to you.
There's no medical reason for doing this. And I thought I was going to pass out, and it wasn't happening to me, you know. So that was a moment that changed the course of my life, and I was so horrified by it. But I immediately started my research that year, and Edward Wallerstein wrote, the author of Circumcision and American Health Fallacy. His book came out in about 6 or 7 months later, 8 months maybe later. So,
what's the name of that again, Marilyn? I didn't catch that.
Circumcision and American Health Fallacy. And the gift that Ed gave us was he went back over all the literature, the medical literature that promoted circumcision, and he showed researcher bias, methodological flaws, and junk science, and said that this is crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
85% of the men on the planet have all the penis that they were born with, that there's, you know, it's perfectly normal. There's nothing that needs to be cut off. And we've had all of these excuses from circumcision infiltrated Western medicine to prevent masturbation. Of course, it never worked. All it did was make masturbation more difficult. The only thing that circumcision prevents is normal sexual functioning. And that's horrific, and it's horrible. Why this is such a difficult issue? What man wants to hear that he was strapped down in the most sensitive, erogenous part of his body, the most important part in terms of his sexuality, is cut off and thrown into the trash can? What mother wants to hear her baby suffered needlessly? And what man and what doctor wants to admit he's got blood on his hands or blood money in his pockets? And this is a billion-dollar a year industry for unnecessary surgery inflicted upon non-consenting minors.
Yes.
And the bottom line to the whole issue is, do we have a right to our own body, or do our parents have a right to consent to somebody else chopping off parts that they don't think are good enough for us?
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my goodness. That is just so much to take in. Just absolutely. And just so grateful that you had the courage and the fortitude to look at that and listen to what happened and really make it your life's work. And it has been your life's work, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's been half of my life now. It's been 32 years.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm 71, goodness. So it's almost half my life. Yeah, I'm getting close, closer.
Oh, amazing.
This wasn't an act of courage. This was, and more importantly, somebody said to me, why you? And I said, I heard the baby scream. And he said, do you know how many millions of people have heard that scream over these millennia?
Yes.
And I said, well, maybe it was also because I was sexually abused as a child. And he said to me, it's the scream that you made as a child. And I said, no. And when I was a child, you couldn't scream. You couldn't say no. It was a scream I couldn't make. But for me, and the most important question to me was, how could you watch a baby scream and writhe in pain like that, scream to the point where he could no longer scream again, where all he could do is go, oh, oh, oh. How could you watch that and not think about, or on the somatic level, not feel what would have to be happening to you for you to make those same kinds of sounds? That's
exactly
the thing. And he said, why you? Why me? Why not everybody else? Why
exactly
didn't anybody else stand up? Why haven't people? Well, it's people have over the years. People have, but and now it truly is a movement. But nobody, you know, and again, I didn't start out as a crusader immediately. It was when in the hospital they told me to keep my mouth shut. You're upsetting the patients, Marilyn. I said, well, they have to hear this. Well, it's emotional time for them. Well, I know it is, so they need to not have this. But well, if they're going to sign a consent form, don't you think they need to be informed? Well, they should hear that before they get here. I said, absolutely, they should. But if they haven't, this is the last chance. And if somebody had come in with me at the last minute and said, this is what's going to happen to your baby, I would have said no, and I wish somebody had. So,
exactly.
And I was doing, you know, as a nurse, I had learned in nursing school that we were supposed to give an education. So when they told me to keep my mouth shut, what's going on here?
Right. Yes, exactly. Yes, it's just amazing the way that, you know, we have been told to keep our mouth closed in very important situations. Well, I'm so glad that you did not do that. The book you mentioned too with Ed. What is his last name?
Ed Wallerstein.
Wallerstein,
who is Jewish and actually allowed circumcision for his son But not really understanding why they were doing stuff that they were Jewish.
Yes.
And so they sort of did it as cultural. And then he began to question it. And as he did and questioned it more, he realized the horror. And before he died, he knew that he had two intact grandsons. So he knew,
how beautiful.
He knew he'd made a difference. And I should say that I have four intact grandsons. So they beat me, you know. But they,
yes.
And we brought an end to it in our family. And again, I know this is not an easy message, and so many people don't want to hear it, but Gandhi taught us something early on. Schopenhauer said it too, but Gandhi, I like the way Gandhi said it, that all truth goes through stages. First, and his stages
I
were
love
first,
that.
First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. So initially, I guess nobody could ignore me because I'm too loud and I talk too fast. But they did ridicule me. They did laugh and they tried to ignore me, but they couldn't. They tried to laugh. Now they're fighting us. And but that's good. It means we're getting closer. So the people there are those who cling to this anachronistic blood ritual, but it's time to let it go. You know, once we understand, and you asked me to talk about the primal wound, a primal wound, as you know, is anything that occurs during the primal period, the first few months of around birth and so forth. And so in this case, what this does is it interferes with the maternal infant circumcision and the pain of circumcision, interferes with the maternal infant bond.
Mm-hmm.
It disrupts it. It interferes with normal sleep patterns and breastfeeding.
Okay.
And it also undermines the baby's first developmental task, which is to establish trust.
Yeah.
And how can that child ever trust again? And many men have said that to me. And in fact, I'm the adoptive mother of a whole lot of men who have chosen me as their mother because their mothers refuse to apologize or even acknowledge the horror. And the fact they know that I did the same thing to my sons, but I've apologized so many times my kids don't want to hear it anymore. But when parents refuse to acknowledge that that body belonged to the boy and the parts belonged to him.
Right. Yes, it's so beautiful. Gibran too, you know, says children come through us, but they are not, for us to control.
That's
One other thing I want to, just have you clarify. I understand that the circumcision process today takes from 15 to 45 minutes. Where I know in the Christ time, supposedly when Jesus was circumcised, it was like under a minute. I don't know what year.
Well, they didn't strap him down like that. They just held the baby and pulled out with. And the other part, and the reason they could do that in under a minute is because they didn't do the first steps that are done in medical circumcisions, which is where they literally tear. The foreskin and the glands are connected at birth by a common membrane called the synechia or the balanoprepucial lamina. And we have a synechia that holds our fingernail to the fingernail bed, two different structures, but they're held together by a common membrane. In the process of fetal development, as the penis develops, the foreskin and glands develop as one structure. So in the early years of life, taking care of an intact boy is not difficult at all because the foreskin and glands are attached. While the boy, baby's in diapers, there is nothing going to get under his foreskin because it can't.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere between birth and at the end of puberty, these two structures separate. The average age of foreskin retractability is 10.4 years. Many doctors don't know that. And he's 3 years old. We have to pull the foreskin back. So one of the greatest complaints we're having today, fewer and fewer boys being circumcised and more being intact, is that doctors have not been trained about the normal structures, functions, development, and care of the normal penis, and so they don't recognize that you leave it alone. You leave it alone that the first person to retract the boy's foreskin should be the boy himself, and everybody else hands off.
Okay, and that takes place approximately at the 10-year mark.
10.4 years is average.
Is average.
Average age. So even into the 20s, some men do not have a fully retractile foreskin till the end of puberty, which could be up to 25. So
that's an important piece of education.
Very much so. And 1 to 2% of males will live their entire lives with a non-retractile foreskin, which is perfectly normal for them. It's not pathological for them.
Uh-huh. One of the things that I have heard, Marilyn, is that it's difficult to clean. And actually, it's not at all. You just have to kind of like rinse the water around it?
Well, yes, of course. With a small child, you wash the foreskin like you would wash the outside of a finger. I mean, you wash
yes.
the outside. And you don't try to retract
yes.
it. The first person to retract a boy's foreskin should be the boy himself. Nobody
yes.
else. Everybody else hands off.
What an important piece of education.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
it
and
is.
So.
It will
say, go ahead.
It will spare a lot of boys from abnormal fiddling.
Exactly. And why do you think, you know, going way back in time, why and how was circumcision began and kind of the pathway or the journey of it's taken today?
Well, it's fascinating. Of course, the origins of circumcision as a religious ritual or a puberty rite are lost in antiquity.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the Dogon tribe that talks about they thought that there's God and God creates the earth and God wants to have a relationship with the earth, and the earth has an ant hill on it, and they have to remove the ant hill, and that was supposedly the clitoris of the female. So that's the first.
When I heard that, I could not believe it. My daughter informed me of that, actually.
Yes, isn't that interesting? Oh, good. She's an educated girl. And from there, of course, we know circumcision started in Africa, so that those stories come out of Africa. And then the first visual we have, the first art piece that we have, is a bas relief from the tomb of Ankh-Mahor in Egypt, and it shows two boys being circumcised. One is being held for circumcision, the other is submitting to it. Who knows exactly? Even the Egyptian scholars can't decipher what it really shows or depicts or means. It could be one of the boys who's being circumcised is being held, could be the slave. Remember, the Egyptians were Jews were the slaves of the Egyptians, and they were circumcised. And they may have started circumcising to mimic the oppressors, you know, the ones who had done that to them. And it was the priestly caste of the Egyptians who were the ones who were circumcised, but the majority of the population supposedly wasn't. All of this is lost in history, but
yes.
we do know exactly how. Well, I'm going to just say from there, then circumcision from Jews and of course it was through Abraham, and Abraham had both Ishmael and Isaac, and Ishmael became he began the line of the Muslims, whereas Isaac began the line of the Jews, and so that's and those are the two circumcising, except for Americans now, those are the two were the original circumcisers.
Mm-hmm.
In the mid-1800s, there actually earlier than that, in the early 1800s, two Frenchmen put forth a theory of disease. It was called the degenerative theory of disease or the reflexive theory of disease. At any rate, what they said was that if everybody came in with a finite amount of energy, and if you expended it too fast, you would you become sick. And so this idea then dovetailed with as the book moved along and it got into hands in England, it dovetailed with Victorian England and the idea of spilling the seed, and it's a sense you're wasting the energy and you're wasting the seed. So what to do about that? And somebody said, well, if we started circumcising boys, they would be less apt to masturbate, and then they wouldn't get these diseases. What were the diseases? Tuberculosis, syphilis, so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And the plague, I think, also took part in that. At any rate, so circumcision was infiltrated then into Western medicine via the idea of preventing masturbation and
mm-hmm.
more specifically disease, and that was done in England, and then it went from England, came here to America, to Canada, to Australia, and to New Zealand, and all of the other countries now the circumcision rate is less than 10%. We're still at 32.
Really?
And in some places,
in other
much,
countries,
much higher.
It's less than 10%.
Well, those are in those countries. In
uh-huh.
England, it's less than 0.5%. New Zealand, about the same, and both Canada and Australia are less than 10%. Well, here we're
wow.
still pretty high. Although in the Western states, we're down below 20% probably for the most part.
So there is great change here.
Well, there is, yes, tremendous
mm-hmm.
change, and yeah, which is exciting, isn't it?
Oh, exactly, exactly. You know, you've talked a little bit about the pain that is involved, which is tremendous, and the trauma. What about the risks of circumcision?
Well, the risks include, initially, the early risks include hemorrhage, infection,
mm-hmm.
surgical mishap, and babies die. And interestingly, they don't keep track of
I wondered about that. Yeah.
No, if a baby dies, he's bled to death, so he dies of infant blood dyscrasia. If he gets an infection, he dies of meningitis. You see, in fact, one baby died at his he died within hours, 4 hours. You know, he lived for 8 days. He was circumcised by a moil. 4 hours later, was dead. And the, and
really?
And what the coroner said was, I guess it was the coroner or the examiner or whoever did that, said the baby died at his mother's breast. He suffocated at her breast.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we took off after that, a bunch of us, and one a son of a rabbi who lives in Illinois, was on the in the Midwest that this happened,
mm-hmm.
Contacted the father and said to the father, that wasn't from breastfeeding. The baby had lived 8 days. So babies don't die from breastfeeding, suffocated breastfeeding, if they're healthy. But the baby was circumcised 4 hours earlier. Why aren't you looking at that? And the father, who apparently the father had wanted the circumcision, the mother didn't, and the father said, I don't want her ever to hear that it could have been from the circumcision. So
oh, my goodness.
So there are more stories like that than I can, you know, we have time for. There's a book's worth of those. And it's horribly tragic. So the early things, and, of course, the pain, circumcision leaves both physical and psychological scars. How can you suffer that kind of excruciating pain and not have it affect you your whole life? Why circumcised men say that they always feel that there's something, what's the next thing, when's the next shoe going to drop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And talk about being hyperactive, hyper-reactive, hyper-sensitive, all of these things, a heightened state of awareness. Well, interestingly, Anand and Hickey did their first study in 1987, and Susan Larson on the East Coast had a little boy who had open-heart surgery, and she asked if he'd be anesthetized for it, and they said yes, and when she read his records, saw that he had not been anesthetized, and she blew the whistle. Well, fortunately...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, KSJ... Anand... then did the research, Anand and Hickey, and again was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1987, talking about because babies were not anesthetized, and most babies are, the majority are still not anesthetized for circumcision, they could monitor the baby's reactions to the circumcision because they were anesthetized, and it showed that their heart rate increased horribly. Their blood pressure was tenfold, and the heart rate, blood pressure all went up. The cortisol levels were way off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
The screams, of course, were noted. So they said that babies not only feel pain, but the younger the baby, the more the pain is registered by the infant.
Ah, interesting.
Because a lot of people say, you wouldn't want to do it when he's older, he's going to feel it. Well, the fact is the baby does feel it, and the baby has no resources. He's just come into the world.
Exactly.
And is this the world we want him to think that he's into, and why are men so overreactive, so defensive, so willing to fight or flee? Conversely, why do they go into this mode of learned helplessness, which is what Michelle O'Donnell talks about happens when you can't run, the baby is restrained, so he can't get up and run, or he can't punch anybody in the nose. He'll turn all of those hormones, and particularly in this case, the stress hormones, the cortisol hormones, are all turned in on the baby's body. And what does that do?
And
throughout life, again, this just doesn't end. In fact, we know it doesn't end. Anna Taddeo and a few other and her colleagues in Canada were asked by the pharmaceutical company that manufactures Emla cream, which is a topical analgesia, and they were looking to see if this would help babies who were being vaccinated at their 4 and 6 month vaccinations. And there was a group of these kids. They all got the Amlo. They were all put in the same position. Nobody's crying beforehand. They really monitored everything to see how Emloclean was working, and they videotaped them. There was one group of kids that became hysterical with the pain, and they couldn't figure it out. So they thought, oh, is this socioeconomic? Is this breastfeed versus bottle feed? You know, they looked at all these different things. No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was the boys who'd been circumcised that responded so dramatically to pain. So they did another study so that they could tighten the controls and their parameters, because now they were looking at this. They didn't expect this, but this is what they found. And so they wanted to follow up on it, and they did another study, and they found exactly the same thing. And they said that the baby's response in this situation was consistent with post-traumatic stress disorder. So that's what we're – these are 4 months and 6 months based from their circumcision. So this is what we've done.
Yes, exactly. You know, when I first learned about this many years ago, I began looking at infants' pictures, especially little boys' pictures. And, you know, I could sense their pain. So many pictures of newborns, you can sense it. And I was really shocked, because I had not seen it before. I had not really been open to hearing that or seeing it.
Exactly. Yes, it's not an easy message, and I can tell you, Sharon, that I've been doing this for a couple of months. I was leaving the hospital, and baby was screaming as I was leaving. Later, they respected me a little bit more and waited till I left the hospital before they started cutting on the kids. Ultimately, I was fired from Marin General. That was 1985. That's when I started NoCirc. So what they did was liberate me, of course, you know.
Yes.
And they fired me for all the wrong reasons. But as Dina Dale said later, Marilyn, if we'd known then what we know now, we would have gotten, you know, that was a wrongful firing. But we didn't know, and this was early on. I just didn't expect any of this. I thought people would be so glad to hear that they didn't have to put their kid through this painful, horrible ordeal, something that I wish I'd known. I was sure everybody would want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was truly shocked to find out that not only did everybody not want to hear it, but that I would get fired for this as well. But some of the arguments, they would say, well, we can't have you upsetting the patient. So I said, the baby's a patient. Nobody's more upset than he is.
That's true.
You know?
Very true. Yes. Oh, goodness. I'm going to take just a break here and let our listeners know about our station, and we'll be back more with you, Marilyn. I want you to listen to know that you are listening to The Voice of Change. I'm Sharon Ann Wyckoff, and this is a weekly program. Today, Marilyn Milos is with me. She is a registered nurse, the founder and executive director of the National Organization of Circumcision Information Resource Centers. And we are talking about the subject of circumcision. Marilyn said that when she began her work in 1979, the rate in the United States in the U.S. was 85% to 95%, and today the national rate is down to 32%. And I'm just amazed to learn that in many of the European countries, it is down to 1% or below. So we have still another half hour to go with Marilyn. So thank you again for doing this interview, Marilyn. I just appreciate this so much, and really letting our listeners know about this really important subject, where perhaps they, you know, can speak up and make a difference in the life of a child. We've talked a little bit about how the baby is affected, and he's affected right from the beginning, isn't he? And it just enters into all parts of his life.
Absolutely, from the first moment. What happens is his babies sleep for hours afterwards, often 8 hours, trying to recover from the trauma. And newborns should never go 8 hours without eating. They shouldn't go more than 2 hours without eating.
That's true.
If left alone, you see. But it's because of the trauma.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about the function of the foreskin? And I know there are many men today that are actually standing up and, you know, suing people that took it from them. So talk a little bit about that if you can.
Sure. The function of the foreskin is not a birth defect. It's there for a reason. It does have functions. It covers and protects the head of the penis. As we talked about, it's connected, in fact, to the glands. Oh, by the way, I should give a little anatomy lesson. The head of the penis is called the glands. It's not like glands in your neck. It's not like your lymphatic glands, which is spelled G-L-A-N-D-S. G-L-A-N-S is a Latin word, and it means acorn. So the head of the penis is called the glans penis. The head of the clitoris is called the glans clitoris, because that's the shape. So at birth, the foreskin and the glands, as I said, are connected. So there's this protective in that regard. And then it also covers and protects the urinary meatus. The urinary tract is meant to be sterile. So how important is this? You know, and when men have been circumcised, many males who are circumcised, little boys who have been circumcised, start getting Brennemann ulcers, a little ulceration from the urinary burns, like diaper rash or whatever, burns around the meatus, and end up having to have a meatotomy. In other words, the opening, because it becomes scarred, the urine can't escape the way it's as fast as it's supposed to be, which can mean it can back up and injure the kidneys. So then they do a meatotomy, which is they cut into that, and of course every time that little boy urinates, he's got that stinging of the urine passing this raw wound that has been cut open because a doctor cut off his foreskin in the first place, you know.
My goodness.
All right. So the foreskin also has immunological functions. They're saying today it was going to prevent AIDS. It's not going to prevent it. Circumcision will they say circumcision will prevent AIDS, and now we have North American research has gone to Africa to circumcise a continent of men there. We already know that we tried that experiment here where we have 500,000 dead circumcised males who were not protected from AIDS by their circumcision. So the foreskin does have immunological functions. It has what they call,
you can make it simple for us.
I'm getting old, you know what I mean? There are structures within the foreskin that will destroy, for example, the AIDS thing. The only time they don't work are when, God, I can't believe I can't think of the word, the only time they don't work is when there's an overload. So if any time you put the penis where there's a whole lot of AIDS, you're going to get AIDS, whether you're circumcised or not. So it may take a little bit longer if you're not circumcised, but you ultimately, if you don't practice safe sex, you're going to get AIDS. So the foreskin does have those functions, immunological functions. It also has sensory functions. As one little boy said when he learned what circumcision was, 5-year-old boy sitting in the back seat with a friend, and they started talking about circumcision. And, "Mom, what's circumcision?" And she explains it to him. He said, "Oh, Mom, I'm so glad you didn't let anybody cut that part off of my body. That's the part that tickles the best."
Oh, my gosh.
We'll talk about that. Inserting the opening of the foreskin. So the foreskin has sensual functions, but more than that, it has sexual functions. And the first thing is that when a male penetrates, as the foreskin rolls back, there's a gliding action. So as often European women say to me, how can American women have foreplay without a foreskin to play with? And how you could think about that is, how would you rub your eyeball without using your eyelid? So remember, circumcision infiltrated Western medicine because they wanted to prevent masturbation. Doctors in the 1800s knew exactly what they were cutting off. They knew they were cutting off the best part of the penis. By the way, they were also circumcised girls, and up until the late 1970s, for the same reason, they're touching themselves down there. They're masturbating, and you're not supposed to do that. So up until 1979, Blue Shield and Blue Cross, or 77 maybe, Blue Shield and Blue Cross paid for female genital mutilation
in the United States.
In the United States, it was done.
I
both
did
boys
not
and
know
girls.
That.
Yeah, and so in 1996, we finally outlawed female genital mutilation. But we have a constitution that says we have to have equal protection under the law. So that law is unconstitutional.
Oh, that's very interesting, yeah.
And we have an MGM bill that people have been working on for a number of years now. Matthew Hess has led that struggle to get legislators to say, no, we can't do this. It's against the Constitution. And in fact, I should say this right here, Sharon. There are laws, national and international, in place that protect the child. The problem is that we've practiced circumcision for so long that we don't apply those laws to the problem.
Right, exactly. It's just kind of like a big loophole.
Yes, exactly. Now we'll talk about the sexual functioning of the foreskin. Encircling the opening of the foreskin are somewhere between 20,000 and 100,000 specialized erogenous nerve endings. They're Meissner's corpuscles. We have Meissner's corpuscles. It's specialized. These are the nerves that feel light touch and heat. And we have them around the opening of our mouth. It makes sucking for the baby pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And we have them in the palms of our hands, the soles of our feet, why they're ticklish. We have them encircle the anus, but they also encircle the opening of the foreskin. And they're highly concentrated in the fingertips, but no more highly concentrated anywhere in the body than they are in the foreskin. And these are the nerve endings that let a man know what his penis is feeling and where he is in relationship to the ejaculatory threshold. These are the nerve endings that they are the accelerator. They allow the man, an intact man, to ride the wave to orgasm. Without them, when they're amputated, a male is left with an off-on switch. So men go, oops, honey, sorry, it's because I'm so sensitive. No, that's not why. It's because somebody robbed you of those nerve endings, and you don't have the feedback to your brain that allows you to know what your penis is feeling so that you could ride that wave. So circumcised men ejaculate. They never reach orgasm or have an orgasm. And it was said very well by C.J. Fowler, who wrote in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 1970, and this is what he said: the fundamental biological sexual act becomes, for the circumcised male, simply the satisfaction of an urge and not the refined sensory experience it was meant to be.
Oh, that is beautiful. Yeah.
And what a tragic thing we've done to our males. And what does that mean for the female? When an intact male and an intact female come together, they have normal sexual functioning. And the intact male, as he penetrates, the glands goes back across the corona, the wide part the foreskin goes back across the corona, the wide part of the glands, and is stimulated. And then as the foreskin everts, then all of those nerve endings are stimulated by the vaginal walls. And as he withdraws, everything happens in reverse. So that intact man needs small strokes, and it keeps his body next to her body. And many women wonder why you start in, and then, oops, where'd he go? Where'd he go? Because with a circumcised man, it's whatever is left of the frenulum, the little band of tissue on the underside of the penis, that basically is there to pull after the foreskin has been retracted, it's pulled forward by the frenulum back to put the glands, making the glands once again an internal organ, like the glands of the clitoris, making it an internal organ. So what's ever left of that frenular tissue, now the frenulum, and we'll go back to our anatomy lesson here, we talked about these Meissner's corpuscles that encircle the opening of the foreskin are in what Canadian pathologist Dr. John Taylor called the ridge band. He identified that in 1991. So this ridge band, and that ridge band is continuous with the frenulum. And so we have several frenula in our body. We have one underneath our tongue, and it's why you can sleep on your back and not swallow your tongue, is because the purpose of the frenulum in the body is to tether a movable structure to a non-movable structure. Your lips don't flop over your nostrils because you've got a little frenulum between the gum and the lips. But the same thing is true with the foreskin. So this is a highly sensitive area. For the circumcised male, he needs to have long strokes, because what he's doing is trying to get as much sensitivity from whatever's left of that frenular tissue, and it may not be much. So his strokes are much different and are not compatible, and this leads to deep tension in human relations and deep tension that no one talks about. He's not happy, and if she said, "Well, it's because you're circumcised," well, he doesn't want to hear that, and she doesn't want and she doesn't want him to think she's frigid. So everybody's faking orgasms and wondering what the heck's going on. Why isn't anybody satisfied or happy?
Yes.
By the way, it's
amazing the effects that it has. Yes, go right ahead.
Absolutely, I just wanted to say that you mentioned in Europe. only England in Europe circumcised. The rest of Europe never has. It's no mistake that they call Italian, French, and Latin lovers the best lovers in the world.
Oh, okay. Right, right.
So it really affects us all for lifelong. And at the other end of life, now remember, we're talking about this premature ejaculation happening early in life and the first, probably the first half of life. But the earliest I ever heard from a man, he was 28. He said that he was losing sensitivity. Usually it's at late 30s I begin hearing, but by mid-40s men are saying, what has happened to the head of my penis? It's just dead. I don't feel anything anymore. It's mm-hmm. not by accident we have this high sales of Viagra in the United States.
Yes, yes, I was going to say, that's what I've heard, that, you know, it just really leads men to want more and more.
Yeah, my phone is kind of clicking. I'm going to just switch to my other phone.
Okay.
One second.
Sure.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can.
Okay, good.
No problem.
I didn't want to lose you.
No.
Yeah.
Yes, it just has so many different effects.
And implications, indeed it does.
Yes, it truly does. You know, if someone's listening, Marilyn, and really wants to begin research into this, what would be the best way to do it? I know you have a website. Can you talk about first and maybe
do.
A book?
Yeah, I think the website is good. It's at www.nocirc.org.
Okay.
And I lead people to there's very specifics initially, and then suggest that there's places to go. There's pamphlets. There's a wonderful DVD, 20-minute educational DVD featuring Dr. Dean Adele.
Okay.
It was made by my son. It's well done and very educational. Many doctors and midwives have said it's done more to stop prevent circumcisions than anything else they've used. So I'd start there. There's some great books.
Yes.
I have a few copies left. They're hard to get now, out of print, I think. But it's What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Circumcision.
Okay.
By Paul Fleiss. F-L-E-I-S-S.
Paul, what's the last name?
Fleiss, F-L-E-I-S-S.
Okay.
Pediatrician in
What
Southern
Your
Health.
Doctor May Not Tell You.
Tell
oh,
you
I
about,
bet that's informative.
Yeah, very much so. It's by Warner Books. The subtitle of that is Untold Facts on America's Most Widely Performed and Most Unnecessary Surgery. So that's a good one. Ronald Goldman has written a book about the psychological effects, and it's quite a good one. It's called Circumcision, the Hidden Trauma. Dr. Ronald Goldman.
Okay.
There's another great book by Leonard B. Glick called Marked in Your Flesh. Circumcision.
I've heard about that, and he's a Jewish man,
yes,
right?
Yes, he's Jewish. He's a Jewish MD and PhD. It's called Circumcision from Ancient Judea to Modern America.
Yes.
I'm very honored to have him dedicate the book to me.
How beautiful.
So, yeah, wasn't that lovely? Some of these, as hard as the work is, some of these things come back and you think, gee. So sweet. And then there's another book by Robert Darby called A Surgical Temptation. It's the demonization of the foreskin and the rise of circumcision in Britain. So he really goes through, and it's Robert Darby, he's an Australian independent researcher, PhD, which is really a fascinating book. And then, of course, I mentioned Ed Wallerstein's books. And then our books, they're listed in the our newsletters and also in the pamphlets. Pamphlet number 2 is the resources, and the books from our symposia, which are all fascinating. The latest one's called Genital Autonomy, Protecting Personal Choice. And I think that's my favorite of all of our titles
protecting the personal choice.
Protecting personal choice, genital autonomy, and the whole idea. I mean, you know, if you came to me and decided that you wanted to be circumcised or chop any part of your body off, and I did my best to educate you, and you knew that it was going to make your penis shorter in size and sensitivity, and diminish it in size and sensitivity, if you knew that it would affect your sex life for the rest of your life, and you still chose to do it, I would support that decision because.
Yes.
You've been informed.
But
the idea is we do not have a right to, because of, for our personal preference, for our cultural reasons, for our, even even religious affiliations don't trump the rights of the child in the 21st century. So
exactly.
The bottom line is protecting the child until he's old enough to protect himself.
So beautifully put. So beautifully put.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Oh, thank you so much, Marilyn, for this amazing program. And again, your website is www.nocirc.org. That's NOCIRC.org.
Yes. There's another good site, which is www.intactamerica.org.
IntactAmerica.org.
Okay. It's headed by George Ann Chapin, and it's been around for, I'm one of the founding board members. It's the organization that really is challenging those doctors. The new campaign that we're doing now is called Put Down the Knife campaign, and it's really to say to doctors, you know, you don't have a right to do this. Nobody has the right to cut off normal body parts off unconsenting minors, and particularly now, you know, if one person died from this, if one person complained from this, we shouldn't be doing it.
Exactly.
Elective surgery. And it's being pushed. Nobody's talking about it, and it's a hard one.
People are right. But you know, the bottom line is probably the dollar, isn't it?
Well, wouldn't you think? Yes, I think follow the money trail. And now we've got, as I said, we have all these researchers going to Africa. They did three terrible studies that they've now got the World Health Organization and the CDC and the United Nations and others saying, oh, circumcision will prevent AIDS in Africa. Well, it won't. It just
and
won't.
They're actually going there to do that, aren't they?
Oh,
now?
They've done this. They've been doing it. Very, very, very disturbing. And we have a couple of NOCIRC centers in Africa. You know, when I started, we just started one center here, and now there's more than 100 NOCIRC centers in America, and we're in 16 different countries.
100 NOCIRC centers in America?
Yeah.
Oh, that is wonderful.
Yeah.
Well,
you really have
spread the word.
Well, it's time had come. It was an issue.
Yes.
This time had come. And,
exactly.
And now that we are in the 21st century, recognizing the rights of children and the harm of what we do when we do negative things to them and the importance of what happens when we breastfeed them, when we deliver them into the world gently, when we stop doing all these invasive things to them and treat them well and with respect, we're going to have a different world.
We are. We are. Very true. Well, thank you for a marvelous hour. It has been a delight.
Thank you, Sharon. And thank you so much for giving me the space to do it addressing it, because it's such a
core
message.
It's very important. I hope you get some response.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. So, again, that's Marilyn Milos, and you can contact her organization through the website, and that is www.nocirc.org, NOCIRC.org. Also, I want to let you know that when I first found out about this some years ago, I had friends that were going to have an infant, and I thought, what can I give them? And a story came through me, which I wrote and shared with Marilyn, and it's called Daddy, Why Are We Different? And you can download that, actually, from my website, and that's SharonAnnWyckoff.com, SharonAnnWyckoff. It's a free download there, and also there are some resources at that site. I want to take the next couple of minutes and let you know about the upcoming programs here on The Voice of Change. Next week, I'm going to be doing an Earth Day program with Master Tian Jia, and it's going to be about spiritual practices that can really benefit the Earth, and she is going to be doing also an energy healing transmission at that time. So that is going to either be on April 21st or 22nd. You can watch the website to know more about that. Sandy Goodwin is with me on April 29th. Sandy is a inter-confidence coach and has been helping clients build self-trust and self-confidence for over 10 years. She can help people learn to be proactive instead of reactive. And the topic we're going to be addressing on April 29th is standing confident in the midst of change. And then on May 3rd, it's actually a Tuesday, we're going to have our early Mother's Day program. I have Danielle Carrillo. She is a Waldorf mom and the mother of two amazing boys, 4 years and 8 years of age. And she's going to be talking about parenting and also for mothers, how to nurture yourself on an ongoing basis. And then on May 27th, I have Kurt Abraham returning. He wrote the book, Achieving Quiet Mind, and he's going to be talking more about techniques for soul alignment and how to stop the busy mind, the scattered mind, and the worried mind. So those are our upcoming programs. I want to encourage you all to go to our archives here at The Voice of Change. And, oh, please leave some comments for me, if you will, or for our listeners. When you have listened to a program and enjoy it, all you have to do is sign in to Blog Talk Radio and get an user ID, and you can leave comments. Let us know what you like and what you'd like more of. And the Blog Talk site has been changed recently, and it's very easy. Right there, as soon as you get to the Voice of Change, you'll see leave a message. And so let us know what you're thinking. And please go to the archives for programs from birth therapists, educational therapists, spiritual teachers. And they are all right there in the archives, and they're very easy to download and listen to at your convenience. Thank you for listening today. And please know that today is the first day of the rest of your life. I invite you to live it consciously with love and gratitude. See you next time on The Voice of Change. Bye for now.
Newborn child.